So tonight we're going to do some Megillus Esther stuff. And the reason for that is because Purim is next Wednesday night. And I figured instead of doing Parshas Tetzaveh, maybe we would have a little a sidetrack and do a little bit of an area in Megillah. So the topic of the shiur tonight is going to be Haman and his family, meaning we're going to understand Haman's personality and how he related to his family. Of course, what does that mean, his family? It means his wife, Zeresh, and his children. So we're going to take the psukim and we're going to take the chazals and the midrashim and try to extrapolate ideas on how to and how to not relate to your family based on Haman, you know, and what we can perceive from the Megillah. Okay? So I'm going to read the first source. So there's not so many mefarshim on the Megillah, so we're going to have to utilize the psukim more just to understand the ideas. Okay? So the first source is Esther, Perek Hey, Pasuk Tes. So just a little bit of background. So we all know that Haman was appointed to a high position, you know, second in command to Ahasuerus. And we all hopefully remember that Esther invites Haman and Ahasuerus to a party. So right after Esther invites Haman and Ahasuerus to a party, the psukim that we're going to read pick up from that point, okay? So that's all the background you need to know, okay? So if you look at Pasuk Tes in source number one, it says, Vayitzei Haman Bayomahu Sameach V'Tov Lev. So Haman, on that day, on the day that Esther had invited him to the party, he left it very happy and with a good heart. V'chiros Haman es Mordechai B'shar HaMelech. So when Haman saw Mordechai in the gate of the king, V'lo kam below Zomimenu, and Mordechai did not stand up, nor did he move for Haman. Vayimalei Haman al Mordechai Chema. So Haman, he was enraged, and it bothered him tremendously. Okay? So let's go on. It says, Vayisapak Haman, so Vayavo el Beso. So what is Vayisapak? So if you look at Rashi, number 3, just briefly, Vayisapak, just the pshat, is Nischazek Lamod al Kaso, Ki Haya Yare Lihinokim Belo Rishos. So he had to be strong and hold back his anger, because he didn't want to kill Mordechai without getting permission from Ahasuerus. So apparently Mordechai was enraged, and he had to control himself, and it was difficult for him to control himself. So that's Vayischazek. So it says, Vayisapak Haman, and he went home. Vayishlach, he sent out Vayaveh Esoavah Ves Zeresh Ishto. So he summoned for those who loved him, and his wife Zeresh. Okay, so the question is, why did he do that? In other words, there's two questions here. One question is, why was he so bothered by the fact that Mordechai didn't stand up for him, right? He was a person in a very high position. And the second question is, why did he go home and summon the people who loved him and Zeresh? What was the purpose of that? What did he gain by that? Okay? Well, let's just read through the psukim, then we'll answer those questions, okay? So the next pasuk is Yud Aleph. So it says, Vayisaper lahem Haman es kvod ashro verov banov. So Haman goes on and on about his wealth and how many children he has. Ve'es kol asher gidlo ha-melech, and all that the melech had heightened his appointment. Ve'es asher niso al asarim ve'avdei ha-melech, and how Haman had become above all the other sarim, all the other officers, and the avadim, the servants of the melech. So he's basically telling them how great he is, right? So it says, "Vayomer Haman." So Haman says, "Aflo hivia Esther Hamalka imamelech el amishta asher asasa kimosi v'gam lemachar ani karula imamelech." So he says that Esther only invited me to this party, and she also invited me tomorrow to be with her and the king tomorrow. But then he says, "V'chol zeh einenu shoveli." But this all doesn't matter to me. "V'chol eis asher ani roe es Mordechai." Every time I see Mordechai ha-Yehudi yoshe b'shar ha-melech. So all this greatness doesn't matter to me when I see Mordechai sitting there b'shar ha-melech. "V'atomer lo Zeresh ishto." So Zeresh says to him, "V'chol o'avav," and all the people that loved him, "Yasu eitz gavoa chamishim ama." So make a tree that is very high. Uva boker, and in the morning, emor la melech, tell the king, v'yislu es Mordechai alav, and you'll hang Mordechai upon it. Uba imamelech la mishteh sameach, and you'll go to the party very happy with the king. Vayitav hadavar lifnei Haman, and this matter was very good for Haman. Vayasa eats, and he made this tree. Okay? So the basic psukim, just an overview, a summary of the psukim, is that Haman, he's very happy, he's ecstatic. Why? Because Esther only invited him and Ahasuerus to this party, but he sees Mordechai on his way home, and Mordechai doesn't move for him, he doesn't stand up for him. And as a result, he goes home and he summons all of the people that love him and his wife as well, and he tells them about his greatness. But he also tells them that none of this matters because of the fact that Mordechai won't basically bow down to him or won't move for him. And their advice to him is to build this eitz, this really high tree, and hang Mordechai upon it, right? So that's the basic summary of the story, basic background, okay? But we have a couple questions here that we have to define. So one question is, why was Haman so bothered by Mordechai not standing up for him? In other words, he was in a very high position, so you'd think that one person not standing up for him shouldn't really affect him so much. And what was the purpose of going home and telling all this stuff to his wife and his friends? And the last question, which I think is the most significant question, is what was this advice that Zeresh was giving him? Meaning, is it such a novel idea to kill Mordechai? I mean, Haman hated Mordechai, and it obviously bothered him that Mordechai wouldn't respect him. So what, Haman couldn't think of this idea on his own? So like, what is Zeresh and his Oavav, what are they adding? Or what great, brilliant advice are they telling him by telling him to go hang Haman on this big tree? Like, what's the big deal? You know, Haman could figure that out. You know, Haman's a smart guy. I mean, yes, he was a Rasha, but he was an intelligent person. So what, he couldn't figure out that you have to kill Mordechai? So what is that adding? We have one more pasuk. And one more pasuk. My brother pointed this out, Rav Devir Ginsburg. So my brother, he said, if you look at number two, it says, "Vayomer Hamelech mi b'chatzer v'Haman ba l'chatzer beis Hamelech." So Haman, he went to the king, v'hachitzon, and the king wanted to know who was in the chatzar. Lemor l'melech litlos es Mordechai ala eitz asher hechin lo. So Haman went to the king to tell him about this whole tree idea and hanging Mordechai on the tree. So what's strange? So if you look at the psukim themselves, the psukim say that Zeresh and the people who loved him, who were his friends, they told him, tell him in the morning. It says, Emor Baboker, tell him in the morning about this plan. But you see that Haman was ecstatic. He was very excited about this plan. So he goes to Ahasuerus at the nighttime. Because if you look at the psukim before this, it says, Balailahu, this was a night. So Haman jumped the gun. He didn't take the advice was to wait till the morning and go tell Ahasuerus in the morning. But apparently Haman was so excited about this plan and this advice given to him by Zeresh and those who loved him that he goes at night as soon as possible and he wants to tell Ahasuerus about this plan. Right? So the question is, the main question is, what's the big deal with the plan? In other words, why was this plan so unique? Why couldn't Haman, or what was it that made Haman so excited about this plan to hang Mordechai on the eitz? And why couldn't Mordechai think of this himself? Right? And then we have the other questions of why was Haman so bothered by the fact that Mordechai wouldn't move for him? So that's a question. And what's he doing by telling his family and his friends about this situation? And what does he hope to gain by that? Okay, Rachel, you raised your hand. You have a question? Or a possibility.
To one of the questions about, like, how come he couldn't think of this novel plan on his own?
Okay.
But just from the psukim alone, maybe it's not that they were presenting it as such a novel plan. Maybe it's just that he goes and he tells his family, you know, there's this one guy and he won't bow down to me or he won't stand up for me, whichever it was. And I'm really upset about it. And they're like, you know what, we should kill him. Like, maybe it's just a back and forth. Because even it says, like,
okay.
So Racheli, like they're just having a conversation and they're getting all riled up about this Mordechai guy and
okay.
This and they say kill him. It's just
Racheli's offering a possibility that the plan wasn't really like such a novel plan. It was just they were just telling him to kill. In other words, Haman had this idea. It wasn't like they were telling him a new idea, but basically they were just basically telling him to kill Mordechai and to enact what he really wanted to do. But, I mean, you could say that. I'm not going to argue with that. But still, the question is, Haman was obviously very excited about this plan, and not just the plan to kill him, but the method of killing him. So there seems to be something unique to this method of killing Mordechai, that because he says that not only would he tell Achashverosh about the plan to kill him, but it says in the Pasuk, if you look at number 2, Pasuk Dalet says, Lemor lamelch litlos es Mordechai ala eitz asher hechin lo. He's telling him about the hanging. So why does he have to mention the particular method of killing Mordechai, right? So let's just get the basic ideas out of the way, okay? So why was Haman so affected by the fact that Mordechai didn't stand up for him? What does that reflect about Haman's personality?
His ego.
Yes, did somebody just say
public, kind of, like, showing that he's really, somebody is actually standing up against him in front of everyone else is, like, more traumatic than anything, I think, than any other thing, because it's showing, giving others an opportunity to also stand up against him.
Okay, good. So you're saying, basically, that, but basically it reflects that Haman was an egomaniac, because a person with an extremely high ego and over-evaluation of the self, if one thing breaks that fantasy of themselves, it often causes trauma. So you see from the psukim that it wasn't enough that Haman had achieved this high level, but just one person standing in his way affected him to the standpoint where he couldn't, he obviously, like he says, ein enu shoveli, that nothing was valuable to him, all of his wealth and everything that he had attained. So it just reflects, from a simple perspective, it just reflects on Haman's level of ego, that he had such a strong ego that he couldn't even accept the fact that one person would oppose him or would stand up against him. It's interesting, just to...
Also, it just shows insecurity.
Yes, I mean, obviously the person with a very high ego and that fantasy also had, it stems from a certain insecurity in the person. I agree with that. And once that was blown apart, that fantasy of how great he was, it affected him. He couldn't just dismiss it. But that's the main idea. The main idea, I think, just the pshat of the psukim, is that Haman was an egomaniac, and that Mordechai basically, Mordechai challenged his ego, and a person who has an extremely high evaluation of the self, when they're challenged, they have difficulty dealing with the challenge, and you see that Haman was affected by it. So what is he doing when he goes to his family? Why does he go to his family and tell him about his Rov Ushro and his Kavod? So it's simple. He wants to build himself up again, right? He's utilizing his family and his friends, his wife and his friends, to build up his ego. So that's why he's telling them, and he summons them, and he tells them about his Kavod Ushro, his respect, and his greatness. So basically what he's trying to do is he's trying to regain that sense of self-deflation that he felt by Mordechai, okay? So those are just the pshat. But the main idea, the main question was, what's the novelty about the plan to kill him in this way? To create this big tree and kill Mordechai in the big tree. Why was it so novel, and why was Haman so excited by it? Okay? Anybody have a possibility for that? I mean, Racheli wanted to propose that it's simply just an expression of killing him. That there's nothing novel about it. But I would like to take a different approach. It's also, the Gra actually mentions this approach. But anybody want to try something before? What is it about hanging that's unique? As a form of death. It's public.
Yeah.
Good, it's public, good. And
well, it doesn't necessarily have to be public.
Okay, but apparently, if you look at the psukim, so let's do the Gra, but you guys are both honing in on the idea that the Gra actually focuses on.
I thought it would be so tall.
Okay. Good. So Olana is actually mentioning another point, the fact that it was very tall. Because it says in the Psukim, Yasu Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Amah, so they would make it very high. It was 50 amos high. So apparently that's crucial to the plan. And that's crucial
to... everyone's going to see it also.
Everyone's going to see it. Okay, good. So if you look at the Gra, the Bir HaGra, in number 4, so I'm just going to read it because the print is small. So the Gra actually explains... a little bit as to what the uniqueness of the plan was. So he says, if you look on the right side of the Bir HaGra, it says, Yasu Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Ama. So let's make a tree that's 50 amos high, which is very high. So, L'chach Amar Sheyitlu Osol Eitz Gavoa. So this is why the Psukim say that we should hang Mordechai on a very high tree. Ki bishar misos, with regard to other types of death, lo yira oso acharkach. You don't see the person after they die. Aval im yislu oso, but if you hang him, so yira oso tamid, you'll see him all the time. The Amru, and they said, Shiyasu gavoa chamishim ama, that you should make it 50 amos high. Ki hari'iya hi gidola min hashemiya ba'arba dvarim. I'm not exactly sure what the Gura is saying in this statement, but I think he's saying that ri'iya is more powerful, sight is more powerful than hearing about something. Ve'echad mehem shiri'iyas hadavar hi gidola min shmiyas hadavar. L'chach haman kishiyeh beveis hamelech, when Haman was in the Beis HaMelech, lo yira kishi yislu es Mordechai, l'chach asa gavoa chamishim ama. So if you just had a regular sized tree, so Haman wouldn't be able to see it when Mordechai was killed. But this is why it was made 50 amos high, k'dei sheyuchal liros merachuk mechatzar HaMelech, so that Haman could see it from afar, from the chatzar HaMelech. V'haisa zo siba me'esa kadosh baruch hu, k'dei sheyuchal achashverosh liros be'atmo. That way, Achashverosh could see himself. Ki ein dome shmiya le'ri'ya. Just hearing about something is not similar to re'ia. Ukmosh ne'amar gamine ha'etz v'chule. Okay, so what do you see from the Gra? So the Gra is pointing out the points that Racheli made and Alana made, which is that part of the uniqueness of this method of death is that you can see it and the body's hanging there, right? So what was so great about this plan or this piece of advice? And what do you see about Haman's family and how they advised him? So they recognized that Haman's personality was one of a tremendous ego and overinflation of the self. So they composed the perfect death scheme in order to satisfy Haman's ego to the highest level. So what was the death scheme? The death scheme wasn't just to eliminate Mordechai, but it would be a constant reminder of Haman's superiority. So the idea that we see from the Psukim is that Haman's family and his friends, they really catered the advice out of an understanding of Haman's personality to Haman's personality. So they recognized that it wouldn't be enough to just kill him. Because if you just kill somebody, you forget about it. But the idea is that Haman, in the death of Mordechai, had to constantly be reminded of his ego and of his greatness. So you see from these Psukim the nature of the advice that Haman's family is giving him. In other words, Haman's family recognized Haman's personality, and they're trying to advise him based on his personality about a plan that would satisfy him to the greatest degree. And that plan was hanging Mordechai al eitz, that was very, very high, so that he would constantly be reminded of his superiority over Mordechai, right? But basically what you see also is that the nature of Haman's family, in terms of how they related to him, was that they catered to his sense of ego, right? Haman is going to them in order to feel a certain self-importance. That's why he's telling them all about his greatness. And they're catering to that. They're giving him advice that fits into that personality, that egocentric personality. So I think the Gra is really, he's really pointing out the uniqueness and of this plan. That's why I think Haman was so excited. Because a regular death, a regular elimination of Mordechai, it wouldn't satisfy his ego. He had such a tremendous ego and sense of importance, he needed a special type of death. It's like a person who who makes copies of his diploma and puts them all around his house. He needs to constantly be reminded of his greatness. People like that, they have tremendous ego, and they need that constant reminder in order to satisfy their ego. So too, the family of Haman, they really fit into his personality. Okay? But we see an interesting thing later on in the Psukim that seems to be a little bit strange. So I want Miriam, can you read the Psukim? So if you look at number 5, so we're going to look at the second, there's two incidents in Megillah where we see Haman interacting with his family, with his wife, with his friends. So that was the first incident, what we just noticed. But the second incident, it happens right after the embarrassing situation by Haman, where Haman has to carry Mordechai in a chariot around the city and proclaim Mordechai's greatness and how the king enhanced Mordechai. So we're going to see a different situation. You have a question?
Yeah. Because, like, can we be a little bit more judgmental? I mean, are we trying to say that they're, like, really clever and wise people, that they are so capable of coming up with something?
Let's go on. Let's see in the Pesukim. Because the Chazal actually say that they were Chachamim. Zeresh was,
Really?
Yeah. In fact, the Chazal that I just, it's not quoted in here, but the Chazal say that, and you'll see from the Pesukim that they're called Chachamim. And Chazal say that even if you just say a Dvar Chachma, just a piece of Chachma, you're called a Chacham. But if you look in the Pesukim themselves, they call them Chachamim. They don't call them Oavav anymore. So look at the second incident. So Miriam's going to read the Pesukim. It's number 5 on the source sheet.
Vayikach Haman etal halavash ve'atasus ve'alash ad Mordechai ve'yirichi ve'hu ve'rachlof ha'ir ve'yikra lefanav kachal yasa le'ish asher ha'malach le'beis bikra.
Okay, so it says that Haman he dressed Mordechai. He took the dress of Mordechai and the sus, and he dressed Mordechai and he carried him through the ear, and he said, "Kacha yaseh leish asher melech chafetz bikaro." So this is what the melech does to the ish, to the man who he desires to honor him. You have to read it with. It's a highlight of the Kriyas and Megillah. Kacha yasela ish, hasher melech hafetz bikara. Okay, go on.
Vayishiv Mordechai al shar hamelech, v'haman nitzchaf al beito, avel
v'chafui rosh.
V'chafui rosh.
So Mordechai, he returned after this incident to the gate of the melech, and Haman, he was embarrassed, and he returned to his house, avel v'chafui rosh. So we're going to see what that means. But it means literally despondent, and his head was covered. So it would seem like he was embarrassed. Go on.
Vayisper Haman lezeresh ishto l'chol olavav etz kol asher karu v'yemru lo chachamav lezeresh ishto im mizera hayudim Mordechai asher haflos l'nfol l'fanav lo tochal.
Okay, so now he goes back to Zeresh and the Ulechol Oavav and all the people that he was friends with, and he tells them exactly what happened. So it says Vayomru lo Chachamov. So the wise people said to him, Vizeresh Ishto and his wife, Im Mizera HaYehudim Mordechai. So if Mordechai comes from the seed of the Jews, Asher Achilosa Linfol Lefanav, that you want to try to destroy him, lo suchalo, you won't be able to, ki nafol tipol lefanav, because you will surely fall in his presence. So this addresses Racheli's point, because you see that the psukim called them chachamov. So they weren't just dumb people, they were intelligent people. So they basically say to him that you're not going to succeed if Mordechai is a Jew. Okay, go on.
Odam edzvrim imam.
So he was still in the middle of speaking to them, and the Melech's officers came to take him in a hurry to the party that Esther had set up for him and Achashverosh. Okay? So what immediately stands out about this interaction? What's strange about this? So what?
Now they're like pessimistic about it.
Right. So Alana's asking the right question. It's a funny thing. Zeresh, initially, when Haman talks to Zeresh and his friends, they basically have this plan to hang Mordechai. But now, all of a sudden, they're saying, you're not going to succeed. Why don't they just tell him from the beginning, you're not going to succeed? Like, give him the right advice from the very beginning. What is it, what changed? And why did they give him this advice now? Why not, if this was true and they had this knowledge initially, so why not tell him initially? Right? All right. But we're not going to answer that question right now. We're going to put that question on hold. So in this story, built into this story, there is an interesting medrash. It's one of the most famous medrashim with regard to Megillas Esther. And we want to extrapolate, because we're talking about Haman's relationship to his family. So we're talking about his relationship to his wife and her relationship to him. So there's a story about Haman's daughter. It's a famous story. So I think we need to analyze that story to try to gain more knowledge in this area. So if you turn the page to number 6, the Gemara is Maseches Megillah, Daf Tez Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay? So the Gemara says like this, because so I'm going to read the Gemara. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk. It says, "Vayikra lefanav." So Haman read in front of everybody. Kacha yasela ish asher melech chafit pikarel ki hava nakit veazil b'shvila deve Haman. So as they are walking in the community of Haman, chazite barate dekaima aigra. So Haman's daughter saw that they were coming down the street, down her street. So Savra, so she thought, Hai de Rachiv Avua, the person who was riding in the chariot must be my father, it must be Haman. The Hai de Miske Kameh, Mordechai, and the person who's pulling him must be Mordechai. Shakla Atzitza de Beis Hakise, so she took the bowl of refuse from the bathroom. Vishadise Aresha de Avua, and she poured it on her father's head. Because she thought that her father was really Mordechai, and the roles were reversed. Dali Ene, so it says that Haman, he lifted up his eyes, v'chazas de'avuahu, and she saw that it was her father, meaning he looked up, and she saw that it was her father. Nafla me'igra la'ara umesa. She fell from the roof, or from the window, and she died. So she basically committed suicide. Famous Gemara. And then the Gemara goes on and says, V'hainu dichsiv, and that's what it means to say, V'yashav Mordechai el Shar HaMelech. So Mordechai returns to the Shar HaMelech. Amar Rav Sheshes Sheshav L'Sako L'Ta'aniso. So Mordechai returned to a state of fasting and a state of wearing the sackcloth. V'Haman Nidchof El Beso. And Haman came to his house ashamed, Avel V'Chafoi Rosh. Avel albito, so he was in avelus, he was depressed about his daughter, v'chafui rosh, and he had his head covered, al she'iralo. So his head was covered with refuse on his head. Okay, so this is a famous medrash in Megillas Esther, but obviously the question is, what's the point of the medrash? In other words, is it just a nice story? I mean, why is the medrash telling us this? What can we derive, or what ideas can we learn from the medrash? So I think we have to break down the Medrash into smaller components, right? And we have to analyze the Medrash, and maybe then we can extrapolate ideas. So the first question I think is why did the daughter do this? You know, why did she do that? Why did she throw... She could have just let them pass by, but apparently she decided to throw refuse on who she thought was Mordechai. So why did she do that? Like, what was she trying to... What does it reflect about her? Why would she just let it?
Her dad.
What?
She's just like her father.
She's just like her father.
She's trying to, like,
right, so she wants to make something public. She has the same type of concept, so why not publicly humiliate him by dumping that on his head?
Okay. Alana said, I don't know if you're. Alana said that basically she said that she's trying to get his approval, right? In other words, normally, a child gets the father's approval or the parent's approval by doing something good. But here, the idea is that the daughter, she recognized that by humiliating Mordechai, and she would therefore gain the approval of Haman. Why? Because she was making Haman look greater. She was feeding into his ego, right? But why? What happened? She kills herself. Why does she kill herself when she sees that it's...
She did the opposite.
Right. So she kills herself, as Alana says, because she recognized that she did the opposite. She broke down Haman's ego even further. So the nature of the child of Haman's daughter's relationship to him is one where the approval is tied to making Haman, or giving him, greater ego satisfaction. And the fact that she kills herself as a result of it demonstrates that her value in her mind, her self-esteem, was tied into her father's ego. And she couldn't accept the fact that she didn't get his approval. Not only did she not get his approval, but apparently she felt so depressed about it that she was willing to kill herself, right? So we see the nature of how Haman's child related to him, right? But what do we see? We read the pasuk before. So we read the pasuk that Haman really, if you look at number 7, we read this pasuk before. Aliza, do you mind reading?
Yeah.
et kivod ashro v'ru banav et kol asher gad gizlo hamalach et asher naso alasarim v'yatei hamalach.
Okay, so if you look at that pasuk alone, how is Haman relating to his children in that pasuk?
Belonging.
Yeah, so he's relating to his children as merely a sign of his greatness, because he's using it. He says, "Vayisaper lahem Haman es kvod ashro v'rov banav ve'es kol asher gidlo hamelech." So one of the things that he's proud of is his children. So his children he views as an extension of his own greatness. He's actually utilizing it as a means of satisfying his ego. In fact, the Chazal say that he had a tremendous amount of children. Some Chazal say he had 30. Some say that he had over 200. Some say that he had 70. So he had a tremendous amount of children. But you see that Haman related to his children in a sense that they were merely an extension of his own ego. In other words, he utilized his children, his relationship to his children, were that they reflected on his greatness, that he could show them off. And he could say, look at how many children I have. So he related to his children in that way. And as a result, you see from this medrash that his children, it had the opposite effect on his children. In other words, they recognized that Haman related to them as simply a means of satisfying his own ego. And therefore, the girl, the daughter, she tries to satisfy Haman's ego, and she doesn't succeed, and she kills herself as a result of that. So the relationship between Haman and his children is a very dysfunctional relationship. Because I would say that the Medrash and the Pasuk that's quoted are just trying to highlight the nature of that relationship. On the one hand, Haman viewed his child merely as a front for his own ego, meaning they were just an expression of his own greatness. And the child, she tried to get his approval by demonstrating his ego, but when she failed, she tried to kill herself. So the relationship, that the improper relationship that we see between Haman and his family, was that Haman utilized his family as a means of satisfying his own ego, and his children therefore suffered as a result of that, especially his daughter, right? Okay. So if you look back at the... Anybody have any questions, or is that idea not clear?
It's clear, but if his family wasn't so good at, like, adapting their personality, like, serving him by...
Well, initially they were. That's where I want to get to. But initially, you see from the initial advice that Zeresh and Oavov give, so they seem to give in to his personality. They recognize that he needs a certain ego satisfaction, and that's why we said that he gives them the advice of, or they get, Zeresh and the Oavov give him the advice of creating the Eitz Gavoah Chamishim Amah. But we're going to get to that, meaning, okay, so we just hold off on that point. But the main point here, just to summarize, the main point is that apparently Haman had this was the nature of Haman's relationship. An egomaniac uses his children as a means of satisfying their own ego. So they're just pawns to the parents, to Haman. And the reaction of that, or the response to that, is that the child seeks approval by basically by satisfying the ego of the parents. And when she was unable, she killed herself. So it shows you the extent of how much that her need for approval in that domain was. Okay. So if you look at the end of the Medrash, it says that Mordechai went back to the Shar HaMelech, Sheshav L'Sukkah L'Ta'aniso. So he goes back to a state of sackcloth and tinus and fasting. And it says, V'Haman Nidchof El Beso Avel V'Chafoli Rosh. So it says that he was Avel Albito V'Chafoli Rosh Ash'irolo. So what do you see in this Medrash? What's the difference between Mordechai and Haman? What was Mordechai's reaction? He was unaffected by it, right? He started out in a state of fasting, and he ended up in a state of fasting. A normal person, a person who is an emotional person, so once they were honored in this fashion, and they were brought through the streets, and in front of him, Haman was yelling out, you know, how great Mordechai was. A normal person, when it would affect them, and it would affect their own sense of self. But Mordechai, he goes back to fasting and sakol and taniso. But what do you see by Haman? That Haman was affected by it, that he was unable to move past that. Because we said it fits into our idea before, that because his personality was so drastic and that he overvalued himself, any hit to his ego would affect him and would affect his ability to think properly and to respond properly. I also just want to make just one more point by the Avel. So it says he was Avel Albito. So it's a funny thing. So in what sense was he an Avel Albito? Because he didn't really, it doesn't seem like he really loved the child. It seems like he just looked at the child as a means of ego satisfaction. So the idea of Avel versus Chafui Rosh, why are those two things specified? This is just my own svara on the issue. So why are those two things specified? So there was two elements that that broke down his ego. One is internal and the other is external. Meaning, when you go outside in public and you see that other people disrespect you because you have dung on your head, which is a natural response, so that breaks down your ego. And then internally, when you see that something happens within your own family and within your own sense of self-importance, which comes from your family, in Haman's case, that's a different breakdown of your ego. So apparently, Haman was affected in two ways. He was Avel Albito, meaning the death of his daughter broke down his ego internally, because now there was a weakness in his sense of self-worth through his children. And Chafui Rosh, the fact that he was in public with dung on his head, affected his ego as well, in a different fashion. So the Medrash is pointing out that there are two ways in which Haman's ego was broken down. One was internally, within his family, and the other one was in public. The fact that he had to walk around with the garbage and the dung on his head. Okay? Alright. So let's get back to the question from before. So we're going to just take up this last question. So the question was by Zeresh. So initially, Zeresh feeds into Haman's ego. But you see later on in the second situation or incident, Zeresh does not. She says, in fact, that you're going to fail. So the question was, why did she change? In other words, if she had this knowledge beforehand, she should have given it to Haman. She should have said, listen, you're not going to succeed. So what's the point of building an Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Amo? So what changed? Or what is it? You don't have to explain what changed, but what does it reflect about Zeresh and Olavov?
Kind of just go with whatever like seems to be happening. Like
good.
When Haman was like on top, they're like,
good,
oh,
good, good,
great.
Good.
But now that Mordechai seems to be rising, they're like,
good, good. So Alana is pointing out a good idea. So Alana is saying that
they're like people who always just root for the winner.
They're yes men, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Alana's saying like this, that when you have a very egotistical person, they try to surround themselves with a person who satisfies their ego. But those people, the people who are drawn to the egocentric person, they're typically the front runner type. They're the yes men. So Alana's pointing out the idea of the Megillah. Initially, Haman was on top. He had just been invited to the party of the Melech by himself with just the Melech, by Esther. So he was on top. But later on, they sense that there's something wrong. They sense that when Mordechai, right after the story that Mordechai was honored and Haman had to pull him around, they sensed the opposite. They sensed a certain weakness in Haman, and they sensed a certain greatness in Mordechai. So what do you see about, what do you see? So you can derive or extrapolate that his friends, the people that surround the egocentric personality, they tend to be front runners. And when they sensed that Haman was, there was a weakness, and that Mordechai was now honored, so they hooked onto that. So it's true, they said something true, and they're called chachamim in the psukim, but the idea of the psukim is telling you the psychological relationship between the egocentric person and his followers. That the highly egocentric person is drawn to a certain type of personality, a person that just satisfies their ego, but those people also are drawn to the winners. They're drawn to people who are on top. So they don't really have a sense of loyalty to the person. Their loyalty is to the person who's on top, the person who is successful. So you see that clearly from how the Megillah portrays Haman's interaction with Zeresh in the first place and his interaction with Zeresh later on. In the first place, they feed his ego because he's on top. And in the second situation, the second incident, they actually tell him that he's going to fail. Why? Because they sense that Mordechai was was on top. There was something, there was some weakness in Haman, and Mordechai had succeeded in some sense. Okay? So, but that's, but the Megillah, the beauty of the Megillah is it's telling you, it really teaches you a lot about psychology, because it's telling you about the personality of Haman, right? And then it's telling you how that personality affected his relationship to his children. Why? Because he related to his children as simply a means of satisfying his own ego. It tells you through the Medrash how they related to him as a result of that. Meaning if your parent is just using you as a means of satisfying your own ego, then you have the story of Haman's daughter, how she couldn't get his approval and she killed herself as a result. And the only means of her approval was to feed into that ego. And then you also see the nature of the relationship between the egocentric person and the people that surround that person. The egocentric person is looking for people to just kiss their butt. And the people who kiss their butt, they're looking for someone who's successful. They don't really have a sense of loyalty to that person. Right? Okay. So just one last point in the shir. So the last point is, what exactly is Zeresh saying to in the second incident? What exactly is her main point? What is her insight into Klal Yisrael? So if you look at number 8, Racheli, do you mind reading number 8? So number 8 is further on in Maseches Megillah. So it's just a little bit further down in the Gemara. So Racheli is going to read. Wait, before you go on. So what's the question? It says, "Ki nafal tipol lefanav." You will surely fall. Go on. What's the question?
Right, so why does it say it twice?
Right. Why does it double the language? What's the idea of nafal tipol? That's what the Gemara, the pshat of the Gemara's question is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Go on.
Amrulo, umazu mashula laafar mashula lekochavim. So it's a mashal to the sky and the land.
Okay.
Kishahin yordin yordin ad afar. Kishahin olin olin.
Okay, so she's saying, so Racheli is explaining the Gemara, so the Gemara is saying that when they fall hard, and when they rise high. So when they fall to the ground, to the afar, and when they rise all the way up to the sky, to the stars. Okay, so that's why it's a double lashon of nafal tipol. Okay, and then go on, just finish it. Okay, so they came and they took him hurriedly, and the Gemara says it means that he was confused, meaning he was in a state of confusion, the Vahala. Okay? So what's the main idea, though? Let's just, what's the idea of Nuffal Tipol, that when they fall hard, and when they rise high? So what exactly did she notice, Zeresh, about Klal Yisrael? What is that concept? How would you characterize it or define it? So I think the idea is that normal nations run by normal sociological and scientific principles. And you don't normally have these extremes by nations. But she noticed that there was something different about Klal Yisrael. What is different about Klal Yisrael? Hashgacha, right? Because there's a certain Hashgacha in Klal Yisrael, there are these extremes of history of Klal Yisrael that we can go to the depths and we can go to the heights of the stars. So the idea that Zeresh is really explaining to Haman is really the nature of Klal Yisrael, the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. That Klal Yisrael don't operate based on normal historical and sociological principles, but rather they operate by supernatural principles, by Hashgacha. So that's the idea that Zeresh noted, and that's part of how it fits into our whole concept, because she noticed that Mordechai was on the up and that Haman was on the down. So when she noticed that Mordechai was on the up, and she recognized or she had knowledge that Klal Yisrael operated in this fashion, she immediately hitched herself to Mordechai, and she abandoned somewhat satisfying Haman's ego. So I think it fits into the very idea that we were really commenting on in the Megillah. Okay. And just one last point, just a quick point. So part of the beauty of the Megillah is how everything was set up, one step to the other. And the Megillah is really a study of psychology. So one of the things you see from both Gemaras is that before Haman went to the party, he wasn't in a clear state of mind, right? You see from the Gemara before, in number 6, that he was avel v'chafoy rosh, that his ego was deflated. And the Gemara in number 8, it says, melamech haviu bivahala, he was confused. So I think the idea of that is that more, you see later on in the party that Haman, he fails to defend himself. So, in fact, he ends up, the Chazal say he was pushed onto Esther, and Ahasuerus walks in on him. But you see in the story, in the narrative of the Megillah, there's no attempt by Haman to defend himself. So the question is, why not? So the Gemara is really pointing out that before he went to the party, he wasn't in a clear state of mind. The point of that is to show you that this is part of the whole design of the Megillah. The idea is that within the Megillah, that the reason why Haman was unable to defend himself and the Hashgacha worked out this way, part of it was because of the state of mind that Haman was in prior to going to the party. Had Haman been in a clear state of mind, perhaps he would have been able to defend himself, and perhaps he would have been able to prevent his own destruction and his own killing. All right. So I just want to summarize the shir and just make one more point. So the shir is basically pointing out the nature of the relationship of Haman to his family, to Zeresh and the people that loved him and his children. So the whole thing, the whole shir is based on the nature of Haman's personality, of his over-evaluation of the self. And the Megillah is telling you how the people who surround that person, they tend to be front runners. And it's true that when Haman was on top, they gave him the perfect plan. They gave him the plan that would satisfy his ego to the highest degree. But when they sensed that Mordechai was on the rise and that Haman was weakened, they immediately hitched themselves to Mordechai. So it shows you that the people who surround the egocentric person, they have no real sense of loyalty. And the second idea that we extrapolated was the relationship of the egocentric person to his family, that he views his family as pawns in his own satisfaction of his ego. And you see from the story of Haman's daughter how that affects the children, that the children seek approval through demonstrating the ego of the father or the parent. But it had drastic effects on her, that she killed herself as a result of that because she couldn't achieve that approval. So we learn from here an idea in the nature of the relationship between the egocentric person and the family and his children as well as his wife. So yeah, question.
So would you say that they are chachamim, his friends, or they weren't? Because you're saying now they're just.
Oh, so that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that they said something that was chachma. They did say a true idea, but the Gemara says it's a chiddush, that there's a havamina. You would think that a person who just says chachma isn't called a chacham. But apparently you learn out from here that they're still called a chacham. Mm-hmm. So what's the Havamina saying that they weren't really perfected people. So you can only define a chacham based on the person's level of perfection. But apparently the Maskana is saying that it's not based on the perfection of the person. It's just based on the knowledge that they impart. So that's the idea. But
they said it accidentally because they wanted.
Yeah, they weren't really chachamim. In fact, that's why I think the Gemara explains that idea. They really weren't chachamim. They're just called chachamim because they had Dvar Chachma. They said something that was true and knowledgeable. And that was the idea that we said about Nafol Tipol, that the nature of Klal Yisrael is unique. Okay? Just one more point. Tonight actually is would have been my daughter's fourth birthday. So it's actually Zayin Adar, which is a famous birthday. I don't know if you guys know, but Zayin Adar is also the birthday of Moshe Rabbeinu. So I was actually thinking of mentioning that, and I was thinking about this on the car ride, that when a child is sick, so I think it's the opposite, and a parent shows love to the child, it's really the opposite of the egocentric person. Because if a person who has tremendous egocentricism, if they have a sick child, they tend to neglect the child, because the child or the children are just seen as a affront for their own ego. So, but a child who's sick, you can't show the child off. You can't say, oh, look at what this child has done. Or so when you demonstrate love in that situation, it's a reflection of parenting, not from an egocentric standpoint, but parenting from the standpoint of an innate love and just the love of the child per se. So I was just thinking about my daughter that, you know, my daughter was sick for a while. And I was just thinking that, you know, my wife and I, we loved our daughter, and our love for her wasn't based on any sense of ego satisfaction, because it's hard to get ego satisfaction out of a child who, you know, can't do much, or who you can't, especially if you know the child is terminally ill, it's very difficult to get satisfaction, and that's ego satisfaction. So the idea is taking care of the child is more of, or comes from, a pure sense of love of the child. So this idea, the idea of how Haman related to his children improperly, just reminded me of how we related to our daughter and how we loved our daughter despite the fact that she was sick. And it teaches you the proper way. You can learn a little bit of Musar from this situation, that a person who's imperfected, he just uses the child. But the person who really values the child and loves the child for the child themselves, so even if the child's sick, you'll love the child and you'll want to take care of the child. So I just wanted to make that point because of my daughter's birthday today. And all right, and that's pretty much the shir. So anybody have any questions on the shir? All right, so everybody have a good night.